Hey there, welcome to The Butter Dish. I'm Heidi Ballard.
And I'm Natalie Delaney, and we are joined today by Katie Crocus, one of our actually long-term friends on Instagram.
Yeah,
we've been like following each other for a couple years. So it's super fun to have her on the podcast and chat. She actually has her own podcast too, so we'll definitely have her clue you in on that. But Katie, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, ladies. Thank you so much for having me. I have been looking forward to this since we first started talking about it. As you know, I am kind of obsessive in my following of both of you. You may not know. If you don't, now you do.
But we're virtually best friends.
I feel that way too. But no, I love your message. It resonates so much with where I've been and where I am and where I see myself going. And if you're not someone who knows where I've been, I came into the Instagram space at a time when I was at the pinnacle of my physique goals. And the reason I even said anything was because in my real life, I was having a lot of people asking me questions. What did I do to get there? What was my workout regime? What food did I eat? How many hours of sleep did I get? What supplements was I taking? What was the magic pill? And I was, of course, saying, it's hard work. It's food, it's nutrition, it's strength training. But people were just hungry for more. So I started sharing and I went from a very private space, my personal Instagram. I never thought it would sort of evolve to what it is, to something that went public. And so if you scroll back in my feed, like you see pictures of like my babies and like my life way before all of this, because I just never thought that it would get any kind of traction, but it did. And it led to some macro coaching and eventually it led to a place of burnout, not only with, you know, maintaining a very lean physique, but also with coaching. And I felt like I needed to shift my message to the life that I was currently living because I have always been very transparent. That's one of the agreements I had with myself when I first came on board was that I'm going to share everything in real time. And so as I've shifted, I've shared and here we are.
Oh, love that.
So let's actually backpedal a little bit. Cause I think that we actually haven't really even talked about it on this podcast at all, but I love that you actually kind of brought it up. Let's talk a little bit about burnout, because I think that people, especially as they're fresh or new into their goals, or they're still in the pursuit of weight loss or aesthetics or whatever it is, I don't think people recognize what burnout feels like. How would you describe what burnout feels like?
For me, burnout came after me because I virtually shut down every cue my body gave me because maintaining, I was calling it maintenance. But what I was really doing was achieving a very low body fat percentage on very high calories. And that felt very easy to me. So I was not the person who was having trouble hitting my protein or getting my workouts or staying consistent. It was very easy and it felt good to my brain, to my ego-driven brain. But as you know, with the ego, like it's never enough. It's never enough. It's never enough. And so, I was somebody who was very committed to the process because I did find a lot of contentment in it. And then eventually that burnout that you're talking about, Nat, came in the form of my body shutting down. My digestion slowed down to almost nothing. My hormones all tanked. I could not sleep anymore. And so I didn't step away from that physique because I was like, okay, I don't need this anymore. I stepped away from that physique because I literally had no other choice if I wanted to get my cycle back, if I wanted to sleep at night, if I wanted to engage in activities with my children and with my husband and sort of become I had become a shell of myself and I didn't even know it. And so that's how my burnout sort of manifested.
So when that kind of came to a head and when you were actually feeling physical symptoms, which the irony is that like you had this physical physique that was like really rewarding and you felt really complimented and like ego driven by, but then your physical body at the same time was starting to give you signals and actually start to like slowly, you know, deteriorate to a point where like, you're like, oh crap, I can't avoid this anymore. What was that kind of mental space like for you? Like, how did that actually feel? Because I mean, I know a lot of people like to throw out like my body betrayed me, but like, did you feel that way? Or did you feel like a little bit like, wow, the honeymoon phase is over. Or like, I'm curious to think like, what do you feel? Because I think sometimes people don't realize that they're actually experiencing that because they believe like, oh, that's only for people who have been super fit before or have gotten to this, like, you know, like the people who are like, oh, you don't really want a six pack. They're like, okay, well maybe you just didn't want it bad enough, but like, I want a six pack. I'm willing to like pay the cost. I think people don't realize like the burnout that comes with maintaining things like that. And I love that people are becoming more vocal about it now. And especially with like the missed periods, It seems like a trend that like everyone who's ever been able to maintain leanness for an extended period of time has had to pay that sacrifice about their hormone health.
So I felt tortured for a really long time because I am a person who's always been able to achieve what I've set out to with hard work. So if I work hard enough, then I achieve my goal. And that's always been the case for me in my lifetime. I've been very fortunate and privileged to be able to be in a position where that's actually how it's gone for me. So, I mean, to be clear, I have a lot of things in my favor. But when it got to the point where I started having gut dysbiosis, so a really distended belly and trouble with digestion was sort of what made me change. Was it losing my cycle for 3 years? No. But when physically my body started to change, just maintaining everything I had been doing, that was sort of like, okay, like here's the red flags that I've been ignoring for so long. That was sort of like the last in line, right? Like that was like the last stop for my body. It was probably, I don't know what would have happened after that. And frankly, I don't want to know. But what was the question? I kind of got on a tangent there, Nat. I'm sorry. I think the point was, I'm sorry. I don't know where
no,
I
was. No, okay. I think I was asking about like, how did you feel as far as like how, like you mentioned,
did you feel like your body betrayed you?
Yeah. Or do you feel that how did you reconcile this feeling between like, here's my physique that I'm so incredibly proud of, but now my body is actually like the one that's like, you know, putting me through this.
Yeah. So I had to get into my body again. The problem was I was just in my head. I needed like less brain, more body, because I was just like, I'm putting in the hard work. Like what is happening here? And then when I started to like sink into my body more and try to take on more self-care, all the activities that, you know, I really needed to lean into, I was like looking at my watch, like, hello, like this isn't working. Like I still don't have this back, still don't feel good here. Like I'm working just as hard, or at least in my head, I'm working just as hard on all of these things I need to do to fix my gut health. When really, and in my mind, I actually was right. But in hindsight, I look back and I was like, I had one foot in and one foot out, right? Like I wasn't all in. And if I would have thrown myself into recovery and healing the same way I had in maintaining a lean physique, I probably would have gotten there a lot sooner. But yeah, I see you want to say something, Heidi.
No, it just really resonated with me what you were saying. And I think that is, it's interesting how that like that ego, whether you're talking about like an inner critic or perfectionism or unhealed trauma, like how that can motivate your mind for a long, long time. And it always feels like fixing, not like healing. I think that's such a great contrast that you just brought up for sure. There's definitely elements to your story that I identify with as well, more suppressing emotions than physical cues for sure. But yeah, it works so much like the boiled frog analogy. Like you just don't really know what's happening until things start to really fall apart.
And as far as with healing, I love, there's an analogy from James Clear about ice melting at exactly 32 degrees. Like you can work as hard as you can, as long as you want, but if you don't work long enough into that point and until something clicks, all that work matters, but you're not there. Like you have to just keep going until it finally freezes or until it finally thaws, I guess in my case. and it doesn't mean all that work up front wasn't necessary. Like it's all there. All that hard stuff that you're going through is there. It's there for a reason. You're building a foundation, but it's really difficult when you're not getting immediate feedback on all this effort that you're putting in there, like you do when you're lean, right? Nobody can see the work going on inside your head. Nobody can see your gut microbiome slowly getting better. And you know, you're not talking about constipation out in the street. And so it's like, where are all these, you know, dopamine hits that you get when you can physically outwardly get that feedback? And I had to really learn how to get it from within and look within myself in order to be patient enough to get there.
Absolutely.
And isn't the irony, it's like we tend to like really glamorize like this work ethic that comes with like changing our physiques and getting lean and building muscle. But like when we talk about like stress or sleep or all the like air quote unsexy habits, people are like, no, it's not that big a deal. It actually doesn't matter that much. When in reality, like those are the building blocks of all your transformations and all your mental space. Like I think people don't care about their brains as much. They just feel like, oh, if my physical shape feels safe to me, right, what my head tells me, then my brain's going to automatically follow suit. When in reality, like how much turmoil do you go through in order to like, you know, like the fear of like not being lean anymore, or the fear of actually admitting that like, hey, I'm not a unicorn, or like that I actually have to take, you know, this off the table. People get so nervous, I think, to admit that, or they believe it's a failure, when in reality, like, how long would you have had to go, and how extreme would it have had to been in order for you to be like, holy crap, I can't do this anymore. Mm. And I mean, I have never been in a position like both of you where like you are like both incredibly lean, but I'm curious to think, like, I think when we have people who romanticize being lean and staying lean year round, like, what are the costs, guys? Like be like upfront, like, what are the costs? Like, what do you feel like the costs are? We talk about the cost of being lean, but like, yeah, what does that actually mean? Because I think a lot of people are like, I'm willing to pay it. I mean, myself included, like, if I could just get there, I don't care what it would take. I mean, I did. I tried it and it didn't work. But I think people don't understand that. Like, they're like, oh, well, it's easy for them to say because they've been there and they've done it. So, but then they don't actually trust what you say, right? Like, you guys can say like, oh, having a six pack is not as cracked up as it is to be. But they're like, everyone's like, no, but I still want one.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the cost is, for me, it's all of the things that kind of make life worth living, right? So it's, maybe that sounds dramatic, but it's like, if I just rattle them off real quick, the cost is your relationships. The cost is your experience. The cost is, you know, enjoying, you know, not just baking the cookies with your children, but eating them with your children and having the conversation that goes along with all of that. The cost is, for me, something like, no, I didn't go away to the lake house with my family this weekend because I wanted to stay home, and I'm using air quotes here, do work, which really just meant like recipe creating and meal planning for the week and going to the gym and not going off kilter. And with that, I didn't see my daughter, you know, do the cliff jumping, and I didn't see my other daughter get up on water skis. And like, these are real stories. I'm not just using this as like hypothetical business. That actually, those are experiences I missed because I was so focused and fixated on my routine.
I feel like mine is like the emotional version of everything that you just said, of kind of nothing ever being good enough, never being done with anything, never feeling like you can really relax or take any time off. There's always ruminating on what you could have done better, having sort of pessimistic predictions of what's going to happen next, of not just wanting things to go well, needing things to go well. Like, one thing doesn't go according to plan, and it's just like, there goes the camel's back. Mm-hmm. Like, just getting very, very rigid and perfectionistic and impatient, unallowing, like just kind of bathing in negative emotion, yeah, constantly. Is sort of what it came to. And does that always have to be the way? Probably not. But for me, when I get into that, like when that momentum starts going, like I start to, you know, it, you just get like addicted to the process of it, you mm-hmm. know, of just like, don't tell me I can. And just like really like forging through the negative emotion instead of like, hey, how you feel is important, not just what result you get, but like, you know, we posted this the other day. It's not the six packs. Maybe you get some compliments or whatever that lasts as long as the dopamine circulates through your body. Right after that, then you just need more and you need more, but you weaken your relationship with yourself. So you, if you even bother to give yourself positive reinforcement, which, you know, I typically don't, but even if you did, it wouldn't mean as much as the compliments from other people, right? Because that's what you're doing all of this for. And again, are there ways to do it and that create less of that? Yes, but it would take a lot of, there would still be a trade-off. There would still be things that you are saying no to, and you're still having to carve a space out of your life to create this physical result. So when people say, is the juice worth the squeeze, what the juice might be for any particular person may look different, right? Like we've talked, like we mentioned before, as we were talking about this, like Jordan, our friend Jordan Lips, for example, no kids. He is a trainer. This is his job full-time. You know, he like that, his girlfriend is in it too. Like they have all kinds of life space for that. Right. But for other people in different phases of life, it just might not be realistic to maintain that level of leanness and carve all of that out of your life.
And I think that's kind of what we wanted to kind of lend and start to talk about is how we go from the, you know, we talk about the messy middle or the gray and in the middle, and how we can transition from like whether these are these extreme goals or the extreme desires or even just like a extreme level of living, even if you haven't even reached your physique goals, but this rigidity that you have as like dieting, always constantly like chasing this or weight loss. And then there's this whole part where we like want to kind of live our lives. And so are we willing to pay it? And are we willing to miss out on things? And then we have the other extreme end where we have like, for instance, like the intuitive eating camp where it's like, you've got to take all physique goals off the table and body goals off the table. And the three of us kind of wanted to come together and talk a little bit about the messy middle and like what transitions might look like and what it might be like, because there is definitely on both sides, right? Like of the space where you have really, really extreme people who like, you know, if it's 0.2 grams off, then it's like the world is crashing down. You know, mm-hmm. you've messed up. Your tracking for the day is crap. Like you're sloppy, da, da, da. And then you have the other end who is like, please don't care about what you eat. Eat till satisfaction, eat till fullness, eat, you know, whatever happens. If you gain weight, that's fine. You know, if you happen to lose weight, that's fine too. But like, don't like, not don't care. I don't believe that's what they're saying, but I think don't care about how the food is affecting you. Care about how the food makes you feel is kind of, I think, like their message more, right? Which definitely has its merits. And for like, sure. We want that. So let's talk the three of us. Like, what does that even look like? Like for me, you know, I think now I've probably done about like maybe 5 or 6 deficits in the span of like 7 years, which is actually not that many, all things considered. There was a good chunk when I started CrossFit. I took about a year and a half, 2 years off of any kind of cutting because I was so focused on performance at that point, and staying in maintenance was the best solution for me there. But I could see how like you could definitely stay in the rigid camp for a long period of time because of the results that you initially get. And, you know, for those of you who have counted macros before or your very first stint, it is so magical, right? When you realize you can eat whatever you want and have this incredible weight loss and you're not depriving yourself and you can have birthday cake and
like the mystery is solved.
Yeah. Like having French fries and still seeing weight loss. I mean, it was literally kind of like, how is this real?
Yeah,
right. And so totally. I can, and if you actually scroll to the very bottom of our page, you know, 6-7 years ago, all we did was talk about like how to basically stay on track and live this lifestyle. Right. And I don't think that we were, I don't know that I would consider us like rigid to the point. Like, I don't believe that we've ever told people that they were sloppy or whatever like mm-hmm. that. Like that kind of stuff drives me crazy because that just is like a completely different podcast, but we definitely were about like, hey, if you want to, you know, stay on track in your deficit during Thanksgiving, this is how you do it. If you want to go out mm-hmm. to eat, this is how you do it. And maybe people would have looked at us and thought we were like totally disordered. I mean, we had a pocket scale. We would take it it's out to true. Breakfast. We would weigh everything. We would destroy our sandwiches in the name of getting an accurate macro count. Oh gosh, were we? I don't know.
I mean, I feel like we were just really enamored with the process and thought it felt like we were code breakers. Like it was, you know, and both having ADD, like, just learning something new, figuring something out is dopamine in and of itself.
Right? It feels like witchcraft in the beginning. I agree.
Totally.
Right. And like, and also you just felt super brilliant. Like when you could figure out how to like fit stuff in or take things away or create a recipe and like nail it. Like it was really, really like intellectually stimulating in a lot of ways.
Totally. Especially having come from a space where it just felt like you never did any of it right. You know, like you had no idea what you're doing, confused, overwhelmed, and just,
Yeah. And it was a
golden ticket. Yeah.
Yeah. It was super empowering. I mean, I think that like, honestly, like this sounds so like in the woo, but like, I really feel like macro counting, like gave me, like I was able to like become my own person. Like it was the first time I ever asked myself what I wanted and mm-hmm. I had my own back and like I had incredible success with it. So I mean, the transformation really was like an inside out thing, but also in the process of it all and, you know, creating Buddy or Macros, like we were able to do that. But then there was a point where it's like, you know, as women started to like, I think, come onto the scene and get more and more into, you know, macro counting kind of became like the buzz, right? Like mm-hmm. the next air quote diet. I think I started thinking like, oh, no, but we also want you to live your life.
Yeah.
And like, people are like, no.
Yeah. Yes.
It becomes a cozy little cage because you can do anything you want within that space. And it goes from, you know, being a tool to help you achieve these goals that you've been after for so long to something that you are afraid to leave. It's like you can't leave your captor because it's just, it saved you in a way.
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm syndrome. Yes. It's really interesting. It's difficult to transition out, I think, too, because there are not a lot of people on this space who are super lean and fit and tracking macros and then don't just completely fall off the grid when they decide to stop doing it. And that was really what made me want to be present for my journey, because I felt like there weren't a lot of places you could go outside of your space and then my space to actually watch this journey transpire. And by the way, this is like the 90%, right, of your life. Like maybe you're living in a state of leanness or you're working on physicals 10% of your life. Even that I think is really overly generous. Yet that's what we see 90% of on Instagram. And so what if we normalized the transformation or the transition or the messy middle? Because that's the part where we actually live, right?
Totally.
I think the problem with that though is that people don't trust themselves, right? People don't trust themselves without either a structure or rules, or they don't trust their own knowledge and their own education. I think that actually what was so convincing about macros was it was science-based too. It's science-backed, right? Like it wasn't just like no sugar or like all vegetables are free or like you can have as much chicken as you want. I mean, like all of them have their like yes, but no. But
and like, also it wasn't like eat 1500 calories for the rest of your life either.
Right. Like reverse dieting. I mean, like revolutionized, I think, like made macro counting so appealing because there was an after plan. Right. Uh-huh. But kind of to your point, Katie, it's like the transition people don't like talk about because it's not as sexy, right? Or because it seems unattainable, or it's only available to people who have air quote made it, right? Mm-hmm. Or air quote mastered it. And that I think is like what I would love to talk about, because then you have the other end where people are like hate dieting. They're so over it. They're so tired of like gaining and losing weight. And I get it. Like it is weight loss is such an exhausting process. It really is. And it's super hard, like easy in theory, super hard emotionally, physically, and in actuality, and in exercise and practice, right? So then we have, you know, like intuitive eating, where I think people really love the idea and the beautiful concepts of it. But at the same time, a lot of us like the idea of that, but like also we would like to maintain a certain kind of weight or aesthetic goal, and we don't want to feel bad about it. And that's, I think, what gets tricky, is because you do feel like, I like this, but I also care about this. And then people feel like I don't want my goals aren't shallow, and I do love myself, but at the same time, and I want to have these things, but then I don't want, I think there's like this huge dissonance that like makes people feel paralyzed, and then they feel like they can only choose one or the other.
Yeah.
Or it's like, forget it, I can't have any of it. And then the cycle continues, starts again.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I think a lot of it is, what I do like about intuitive eating is that it really does force you into a space where you have no other choice but to trust yourself. And I think so many of us who are in the macro counting world, the people who are very binary about macro counting and are not willing to like be in the gray with it, believe that it's here or there, and it's not. And I mean, the messy middle is this enormous broad space, and we think that it's just like here or here, but it's actually very nuanced. And so you can land any place in the middle. And this is my message to somebody who is tracking macros rigidly right now, who's like, gosh, I'm just afraid, I can't do it, it just won't work for me. What if it's better? What if it is actually better than you ever imagined? Mm-hmm. And like, spoiler alert, it is, okay, but you have to get there yourself. You have to sort of figure that out yourself. But here's why it's better: because suddenly you are getting information from all of these other resources that are not external. They are within you. And that is where you get your power and your peace. Your beauty and your youth does not bring you your power and your peace. Your trust with yourself and your ability to go within and receive these messages from your body, that is what brings you your power and your peace. And you do not get that from tracking macros your entire life. You just don't.
Totally. 100%. And that is like, I mean, that is after our, you know, on our Instagram feed, after the section where we talk about like how to hit your cutting macros on Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff, there's also, maintenance was such a revolutionary experience for both of us. And one of the thoughts that really just like blew me away was that my results are not as fragile as I thought they were. You know, like I thought I was building, you know, being so specific with all of these behaviors, it makes you, you know, feel like if you deviate at all, perhaps the tower will come like crumbling down. But to realize like, no, your body does fluctuate. You have all kinds of time to pivot and change things, like going off 1 day, 3 days, a couple weeks, whatever it is, like as you start to step away from tracking absolutely everything. And, you know, if you have gotten to that super rigid place, right? Like that freedom that comes of realizing like, wow, yeah, I can exhale and like everything's going to be completely fine. And that really it is like, it's a combination of all of your lifestyle habits and how they feel that gives you the result. Because again, like going back, like the super, super lean result is not what keeps you warm at night. It's whether or not you're, happy with yourself, proud of yourself, the way you talk to yourself, like, you know, realizing I'm a good person worthy of love, regardless of whatever aesthetic result or compliment or lack of compliment or scale number or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're all fluctuating humans, and that I think even that lesson in and of itself of realizing like, yeah, the scale fluctuates, and that doesn't mean what I've always thought it meant, right? Like like it's, you're allowed to you can take this analogy as far as you want. Like you're allowed to fluctuate.
Yeah.
Everything.
I love that you both always suggest, you know, maybe instead of like a 3-pound range, you have like a 5 to 10 pound range, like to account for being a human being that, you know, does different things day to day. And that isn't a robot who, you know, and by the way, we both know, even if you are robotically tracking your macros, you will still fluctuate, but like you have to incorporate, God willing, we have birthday parties and holidays and all of these exciting summer events coming up. But can you imagine a life stripped of all of those? I mean,
Yes. And can you imagine, not only means how many women are worried about the weight they're going to be on a specific date or vacation or holiday or whatever, when instead aren't you like, is no part of you curious about how you're going to emotionally feel, right? Like this idea that if we control our bodies, it's going to control our emotions. I mean, I definitely have been in that space before, and that is not at all how it works.
Well, and like, what's the point of having this incredible body if you don't want to take it anywhere? Like, did you create this physique and this lifestyle so that you could stay home more often?
That's how I did it.
But like when you think back and you like, I love that you actually shared like real true personal experiences, because there is true, like you did miss out. Like, yeah. So you didn't miss out like on your physique. I know people are like, oh, I'm so scared to go away and lose progress. It's like, but really what is life if not living in the physical body that you're in right now? Like we have this body to have experiences in it. And are you really going to lose progress? But the only reason you're going to lose progress is if you didn't buy in to the lifestyle that got you them, right? Because you feel like, you know, everything is super fragile, but it's like, we've said this before. It's like, maybe you're actually more fragile than your results. It's like everything is available to you as long as you like believe that it is, right? But it's the second time you think, oh, it's going to be gone if I just dare enjoy my life. Is that really even living? Mm. You know, we say often like it's not like a dream body if it's a nightmare to maintain. And I think that people just see that as like, how many macros I have to count. It's like, no, it means everything. Like if you don't have a comfort window that's large enough to provide for your life, kind of like finances, right? Like if you're living like budgeting like to the dollar and there's no room for anything to happen, like your car can't break down, you can't run out of gas, your kid can't want anything, you can't like, it's like that level of intensity and stress and like even just like the tension in your body that you'd have to live under in that kind of fear space, how does that feel like a healthy physique, right? Mm. Like, and I think sometimes we see that like people use macros, you know, it always makes me really, really sad when people are like, oh, counting macros gave me an eating disorder, or counting macros triggers me. And it's like, it's just a tool. Right. Like in and of itself, it's like we eat macros every day, like regardless of not if you're counting them or not, or you understand, you know, what they do and the micronutrients that come attached with them. Like it's just food. Like it is. And like, just as like you can destroy something with a hammer, you can also build something with a hammer, and it's just a tool. Mm-hmm. But the lens you see that tool through really is more about the context of like how you see yourself as a person and who you are.
100%. I mean, forgive the reference. But like I told you, there was like a TikTok of Johnny Depp where he's talking about how he had a glass of champagne after being sober, but that he didn't do it because he was trying to bury emotions. And I was like, that's it. Well, that's it. Right. Like that's what we're whether you restrict or whether you, you know, quote binge, close quote, like it's always the emotions underneath it. Right. So the same thing, I mean, macros is neutral. It's yep. how you're using it, what is driving it. That's what's important.
I love that I have this tool, and I think there's going to be a time that I probably will go back to it at some point. But for me, the important time is working to dismantle some of the beliefs that I had about myself when I went into macro counting. Because I think if you're someone who has any disordered eating tendencies or control issues, you have issues letting go of control, macro counting can be like gasoline on a flame.
Yeah.
And I was combustible for a while. Like I was at the point where I was just, I could not let go. I could not let go of control. And, if we're always in control, then we really don't know what life is capable of. Right. And that was like totally. The blinder that I had on with that. And so I truly believe I can go back to tracking macros again. I probably will. It's not even close to being on my radar now, but I really had to do the work to dismantle some beliefs and figure out, do my goals align with my values? Because at the end of the day, I don't value the things that I was working for the way I really had to get clear on like what was most important to me in life. And it turned out like being shredded, 10,000 steps a day, meal prep, several hours a week, those weren't on the list. Those did not contribute to the values that I really had set forth in my life. And so that was what helped me change the trajectory and get behind some new behaviors. Yeah.
Would you be willing to share? Cause I love that you brought that up, how like you use macro counting macro counting was toxic to you, but like, could you share what that would actually look like or feel like? Because I think sometimes people are like, I want to lose weight, but macros triggers me or macros puts me into an eating disorder, but yet they kind of want like a workaround. Like, how can I still use it, but like not become disordered around it? When in reality, it's like the disordered eating is really what you should be looking at before you're like cutting calories and tracking macros a certain way. Like, what would that feel like in somebody's life, or what would show up like that way? Because I don't feel like I mean, I don't know. And now I'm gonna have to go back and revisit like our earlier page and like, were we disordered? Like, I didn't think that I was, but at the same time, I can see why those practices would feel that way to somebody who feels like controlling or restrictive or things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think so. First of all, if you are someone who's aware enough to say macros triggers me, good for you. That's great that you know that about yourself, and don't just bury that. That popped up in your mind for a reason, and you kind of need to pull that thread a little bit. And I think you need to work on first the fact that that came up in you, because that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. Macros are always going to be there. They're always going to be waiting for you, but they will work best if you are approaching them from a headspace that is not all or nothing. And if you have any all or nothing tendencies in your life in any way, if you're like, oh, I'm an abstainer, I can't, if I do this, then I'm all in. Or, I really equate my worthiness to other people's feedback, or a number on a scale, like makes or breaks my day. If any of those things sound familiar, if you're kind of like slowly raising your hand back there, you may need to work on some self-efficacy first before you dive into macro counting.
Totally. And if it doesn't feel particularly bad, but you are like in this hyper sort of flight reaction where it's just busyness, productivity, and you kind of are driven by this belief of like, I'm fixing it. And I can do it all. Don't tell me I can't. I can do it all. Like, and you're just sort of driven by that motor. It's also like, bring in some of that. Bring in some of the stuff you're talking about, like meditation, cultivate a little bit of stillness, make sure that you are taking time to check in with your body. Because again, like that, you can get old. To your point, you can get a lot of steps with a charged up flight reaction, but that it is going to come, it's going to come crashing to a head at some point.
And that's the work nobody wants to do, by the way, the meditation and stuff like that. You guys talk about Brené Brown, and I love her in the arena, because here's the thing. You have to get in the arena with everything. It doesn't just... That doesn't only apply to things like the hard work, I'm using again air quotes, like macro tracking and strength training. Like, you have to get in the arena with like the meditation and
totally
and getting in your own head and like sorting your shit out. Like, that is hard work. And a lot of times people just say, oh God, that doesn't feel right. My therapy is my workout. No, mm-hmm. no. That's if you're someone who says like my therapy is in the gym, you need to actually go to therapy and figure
totally.
It out.
Totally. And totally. And being a specific scale number is not an exchange for being in the arena. Oh, I'll just, instead of doing that, I'll just make sure I'm this weight forever or mm-hmm. or whatever. That's well, not exactly love, how it's not.
I also
works.
Love what she says about the arena. Like if you're in the arena, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. know that it's, you are going to get a like the beat down of your life inside there with your own self. Like it's going to be you doing it, not anybody else. Like no one's attacking you. No one's criticizing you. It's like literally your own person is the one who's going to be handing you things in the arena. And I love what you guys brought up because I wanted to actually ask that. Like, why do you think people avoid it? Is it just because it's uncomfortable or they're just like unwilling? Because how many times have we seen like, oh, I don't weigh myself. The scale is too triggering. Instead of being like, why does the scale trigger me so much? But they're just like, yes. I'm just going to avoid it instead. It's like avoidance actually just almost like brings everything to a head at one point when you don't even realize it's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, everything, all the scaffolding comes crashing down and you don't really realize like, this is me avoiding the scale. This is me avoiding ding dongs. This is me avoiding my mother every time she like wants to talk to me or take me out to dinner. This is me avoiding like all these little things that we don't want to feel. Mm-hmm. End up becoming like the thing that like brings everything down.
Totally.
Well, go ahead, Heidi.
No, you couldn't have explained it more perfectly. It's like all those things that you don't want to feel, they don't just like go away. Mm-hmm. They just stay there sort of like treading water until like you have an emotional reaction that you can't control. And then, hi, we are all coming with you. So if you have like, if you're, you know, kind of the Scarlett O'Hara thing, like, I can't think about that right now. I'll go crazy if I do. So I'm just going to put it in the back of my mind. And then you get humiliated or something. And then it's like, whew, all of those unprocessed emotions. So it feels extremely overwhelming. So then we tell ourselves, I don't want to do this again. So I'm going to go ahead and keep putting stuff back on the shelf. And then the shelf comes down, you know, so you're only used to your emotions feeling overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So learning how to process emotions.
Yeah.
Naming it like what's going on with me right now, not just like me feel bad, me feel, but like I feel uncomfortable, I feel embarrassed, I feel sad, I feel lonely, like those, naming it to taming it, and then connecting with your body and how that emotion feels,
figuring out what is the call coming from inside the house.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah.
Because if it is constantly your ego telling you to improve, to do better, to, you know, productivity equals worthiness, to, you know, get positive feedback from external sources, all of that stuff. If that's the call coming from inside the house, it's real hard to heal. It is really hard to be still with yourself if that's the message that you're getting. So like, again, getting in the arena, Matt, like you said, and fighting with yourself is what it takes to really sort of work through those demons. Because I don't know, like I'm 43 years old. And so I'm working through decades of them. And it's not just going to happen, you know, summer shred, 30 days, 90 days to a better head. Like, no, if somebody please come up with a fast track program for that, because I would probably pay stupid money for it. Not the way it works. Like you got to get in there and you've got to take the time.
But you know what really does it? And I'm going to be totally honest. Like this is what kind of I've done last year. I have been okay with being sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is probably the best thing I've decided for myself last year. Like I was just like Heidi would always be like, oh, no, I don't want you to feel sad.
Codependent, much.
Well, and I'm just like, I'm good with being sad. So like there are total days that I'm in a complete sad cave and I don't even try to fix it. I don't try to change it. I don't try to diet my way out of it. I don't try to like track till I feel better, right? Mm-hmm. It's more of like the more we allow the negative emotions, the better we get at managing them. And it's, I love your house analogy. And I was actually just telling this to Heidi this morning. It's like, it's so interesting how if the outside of your house, if all you're doing is working on the outside of your house, but you're not taking time to like put any effort or investment into the inside, nobody's going to be able to tell. I mean, what goes on inside the home is way more important than the outside of the house. Like, so yeah, congratulations. The flowers on the outside look really great. You've had your, you know, windows power washed, but if in the inside there's like neglect and lack of care and things are just falling apart on the inside and you're not maintaining what's going on inside the house, it's not going to matter how great the outside looks like. And I think so many times people try to fix the outside of the house to make up for the inside of the house, when in reality, it's like, you just can't. The inside of the house is where all the home happens, right?
Well, totally. And yeah, if like you were saying, both of you, like if being you feels terrible, like you're going to be motivated to get reinforcement from other people, which is really, you're disconnected from yourself. It's always going to feel hollow and terrible. And that, like, to that, to your point too, about like the, if that inner voice is hypercritical, that's not really you. That's your conditioning. That's your inner critic. That is that. And that is a voice that will never, ever be satisfied. Mm-hmm. So being with yourself in stillness, allowing like those kind of like learning to understand that voice, where, what the wounds are that created that voice, and developing some compassion for yourself is so key in all of this healing, for sure.
So let's like talk, like, what does the gray area look like? What does somebody who isn't super rigid and in the cozy macro counting cage, right? Or the other end where they're like, okay, well, I guess the only way to find self-love and body acceptance is to not care about myself anymore and just like, let it be. Right? Like, what does the middle look like?
I think one of the first questions you can ask yourself is, if you're in the very beginning and you're in the middle, you're trying to get through to the middle, what do I need freedom from so I can have freedom to?
Love that so much. Can you say that again?
Yeah. And explain what that means to you.
Yeah, it's okay, so good.
So what do you need freedom from so that you can have freedom to? And I think, you know, you can start at either end you want, but for me, it comes down to values. I determined this year that the things I value in 2022 most are my happiness, my authenticity, and beauty. And beauty, by the way, is not like conventional beauty. It's just what makes me feel radiant. That's my definition of beauty. And so what do I need freedom from in order to achieve those things? And it turns out I do not need things like, you know, being shredded, limiting my calories, tracking macros, getting 10,000 steps, like all things that I really thought were like, I'm a person who moves. I'm a person who works out every day. I'm a person who, you know, hits these macros. Like all of those beliefs, all those things that I told myself really didn't align with my values. And so like I would start to wake up every morning and instead of say, what should I do today? What should I remove today? And create the space I needed to succeed. And a lot of times, what should I remove today was stuff like negative self-talk or the need to check a box. So those types of things that I felt like kept me going, kept me fueled, kept me filled up were not actually what I need. Those were the things I needed to remove to make space to grow.
Oh, gosh. And that's, so and good. I think, I mean, as you're even saying all this, which is so incredible and I love so much about it, because I'm thinking about like my freedom from freedom too.
Yeah.
I think the way to start is actually look at what you believe your current core values are. Like, who are you as an individual? Like, what do you accomplish every single day that you find joy and pride in, or that has become like a habit of yours that not meeting would make you feel like you didn't accomplish your day, right? And even they could be really good things too. I'm not saying that like habits aren't good, or habits are destructive, or habits are like really bad, or obviously that's not what I'm saying. But I think sometimes we put so much of our self-worth in things that we've always done, mm-hmm. not realizing that we might need freedom from them as well. Like I remember when I sprained my ankle last year, I wasn't in a position to get the inordinate amount of steps that I was used to getting. So releasing myself from that pressure to make steps. I mean, the first day I had, the next morning after I sprained my ankle, I'm like, oh, I bet you I could still make my steps. I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? Are you freaking crazy? You sprained your ankle. It should be iced and elevated. And you should be like, you know, taking like Advil. But I was thinking like, I could probably figure out a way to get 10K in, or at least 7, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, holy, like, oh my gosh, like, can you just like slow down for a second? Not that getting steps is like a bad habit, right? It's not. It's just like macro tracking. Macro tracking in and of itself is not evil, right? But why was that so important to me? What did meeting 10,000 steps a day mean to me? What did I make that mean about who I was as a person? Like, what kind of integrity did I build around it? And now, like, even like taking rest days, like now I'm like, Heidi, do you think I've taken too many? Do you think that if we do like 2 or 3 days where we don't go in the gym, like it's been so interesting, like the freedom from grinding 5 days a week. Like we would go in no matter what our sleep was,
no matter what,
how we were feeling. If we were like barely hanging on by a thread, it was like, no, we have this incredible like gym work ethic, and we sustained it for, gosh, like what, 6 years until the pandemic, really.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like,
but we still went hard. We went arguably harder during the pandemic,
right?
Like 2 hour like, bodybuilding sessions.
But there was something so beautiful about like freedom from that kind of schedule to give us freedom to like, hey, maybe prioritizing sleep will help you with your mental health. Mm-hmm. As we've been working on that more, it's been definitely more of like a year that we've done more mind bodybuilding than like physical bodybuilding.
Yes.
So I think, what are your core values, right? And can you create like your own like cocktail that aligns with you? Like, are you okay with that? Like what you're talking about, like not missing certain things, but also saying yes to certain things. It's like, it's not going to look like someone on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like newsflash, guys, what people put out there is literally not what like the real context of their lives are.
Right. Exactly. That, yeah, that's why I love, again, the accounts that sort of show the mundane, because that's the 90% of actual, of the actual life, not the reels that you see on Instagram. And I think if you're someone who's like, gosh, I can't, there's so many obsessions, I would call it obsession, like where your mind is constantly pulled back to, you know, counting the macros that are on your plate or thinking about what you had yesterday and trying to come up for today. Like you can't just necessarily action your way through it the same way you can when you're doing like fat loss. Like trying to live in sort of like some top line behavior goals that have nothing to do with exercise and food and nutrition, and then sort of letting time heal you, I think is more beneficial than like checking all the boxes and being in the arena with your own head. Like it's so easy for me, someone like me, to default to the doing, like, oh, did my meditation, I'm going to check that. Did a little journaling, going to check that. But it became so that it became tasks that, again, I was like, well, I'm checking boxes, I might as well just blah, blah, blah. Things that weren't necessarily supporting me. So like everybody, like you said, Natalie, I think has to like sort of tailor, customize what their top line behaviors are to support their values and focus on those. And as you focus on those, your obsessions will start to slowly just, you'll slowly release them. And it is way slower than you want it to be. Like, just like muscle building. Oh, by the way, I mean, nothing happens as fast as you want it to, but like good news, you already know that.
100%. I love everything both of you guys said. I think for me, the similar, I think, to some of the things that both of you have said, but it's freedom from what other people think or how I believe I affect other people to caring about what I think, freedom to care what I think, to even understand even what that is, to sort of understand and own my own story. I mean, there's so many parts of my life that I, you know, the journey of being lean, the journey of fixing, I was getting away from that person. You know, I was creating a better version of myself, as opposed to, like Brené Brown says, owning your story, understanding who you were, having compassion for yourself in every phase of life. Right. So definitely that, and that sounds really vague, but it might be things like, not overthinking my own ideas, whether that be an Instagram post or something I say to someone, or, you know, those kinds of things. It's like realizing, hey, you did the best you could with what you had at the time. Right. And we're just going to honor that. Right. Like, even if I believe I made a mistake, it's still, I'm a good person worthy of love. Okay. So you made a mistake. Are you really saying you don't deserve to be happy right now? Is this what we're saying? Like, that's,
I mean, by the way, the dip is sacred too. Like, let's not forget the fact that that's where we learn. That's where we become better, is when we have these dips in our lives and we grow from them. Like, it's all part of the process. And if we didn't have them, we couldn't grow. So yes, absolutely leaning into that. That is so beautiful.
Well, it's like, I love how we're talking about like the gray in the middle. And if you think about like the middle is really your personal ground zero. It's like, it's not an extreme on either way, because we both know that like those uphill climbs are super treacherous and the way down is sometimes even scarier. And so what does that middle ground look like for you? It's going to look different than anybody else's. Like the three of us, our middle, our gray is going to look way different. I don't prefer Heather. I like a darker, deeper gray. Like a Heather
who's
gray.
Who's Heather? Oh no.
No, like a Heather gray. But that's the thing, right? If we say like, what's your favorite gray? We all know it's all going to be something different. Right.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to have that. And I think that's part
Would
of
Would you really, say there's 50 shades?
Maybe more. I think that that's also like, yeah, the bondage from all this, right? And, you went there. But I think it's true. Like whatever you want to make something, it can be your personal prison or it can free you from it.
Oh.
And it's like, wow, you get to decide that. Yeah. So if you're using macro counting as a cage, that is going to be something that you should get in there and examine. Just like for us, like it was actually what gave me the ultimate freedom for myself.
Yeah. And if it started as one thing, but you feel like it's shifting into something else, that may be like you were saying, like a call from inside the house that like, hey, maybe it's time to do some like realignment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so good. All right. Any last thoughts?
I mean, for me, something I've realized recently is that, like, what if all of the things I was trying to avoid in the past are actually the things that contribute most to my value system? Yeah. Like, that I had goals and values so far apart, so distant from each other, that I just, like, sort of shut down the ability to, like, feel alive in a lot of ways. And so, I mean, I wrote a post about this recently and how, you know, I'm so like, I think Heidi, you said this, like, I'm going to overthink that, like, everything, I'm going to overthink that. And like, I had, you know, late night pizza with my family, way too many handfuls of s'mores bark. And the next day I'm like, okay, what triggered that? What happened yesterday that made me go ahead and do those things that probably, like, weren't the best for my body? And I'm thinking, and I'm like, So like, I, you know, we had this great outing with the family. We went for a bike ride. I saw some friends. We had a community event. We came home. We had some pizza. I had a great night's sleep. And I'm rattling off this amazing day I just had. And I'm basically soiling it, saying, like, things weren't good enough. Obviously, I messed up somewhere. When in reality, like, big picture, Katie, you had an amazing day. And maybe, just maybe, that late night pizza with your family and those handfuls of s'mores bark contributed to it. Like, imagine that. And so it's a shift in perspective for me. And I'm still working on it. Like, I don't want anyone to think that, like, I've landed, I've arrived, here I am, I've got this. Like, it's the messy middle for a reason. Like, I'm sloppy AF, and like, I'm still, like, fumbling my way through it.
Well, absolutely. Right. Like, that's there's only here. Right. And there's no, like, ideally there's no place where we don't experience any negative emotion anymore, because it's like that, it's that contrast that keeps us growing and expanding. I think final thoughts for me are just, we're not trying to trash leanness as a goal or anything like that, but rather that it's not a substitute for a relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a flippant, ooh, let me just add this on to, like, everything else I have going on in my life. Like, if it is going to require some sacrifice, whether that be positive emotion, time, whatever it is, like, it's going to need a lot of space in your life. And so don't hate yourself if that isn't worth it to you, right? Because it's not just an easy, for most women, there's probably exceptions out there somewhere, but for most women, it's just, it is a very taxing process.
Mm-hmm. And I think last for me, it's like kind of what we talked about in our, like, you know, pre-podcast.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, we spend 10 or 15 minutes before we actually start recording. But I love the idea of coming from a place of, like, healing versus fixing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we use different things that we believe will fix ourselves because we believe we're broken or we believe we're not enough. And that not enoughness never leaves room for healing. Healing is accepting who you are right this second and asking yourself, like, what you need. And, like, just like you wouldn't, you know, just like sticking a band-aid on something that needs to be stitched or require time, you know, not trying to, like, you know, add 10,000 steps to a sprained ankle, or not trying to, like, I don't know, like, do something to bust your stitches open. Like, if you look at yourself from a place of, like, gosh, what do I need? What could I heal about myself today that would make me feel really, really good? Guaranteed, you're never going to look at yourself and be like, weight loss would be healing for me.
Right.
It might be, the process of it might be, like, the actions might be, the way that you care about yourself and ask yourself what you want first and foremost might be healing, but you don't need to lose the weight to heal yourself. But you might believe you need to lose the weight to fix yourself. And there's a complete difference between the two. And so let's just be so, so kind and good to ourselves, because both extremes are never going to feel good to you. And it is the middle. The middle is where you find yourself, right? And in your own arena. So that's my thoughts. And my takeaways.
So well said. Ladies, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, tell everyone where to find you, Katie Crocus.
You can find me at Katie Crocus on Instagram. I also have a website where I blog everything as well. It's empowernutritioncoach.com. The irony is I'm definitely not a coach. But there was a time when I thought that might have been my calling, and that is my domain name. So you can find me there as well.
You're a different kind of coach.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Everything you've talked about on this podcast, great. Yeah. Great coaching.
Well, Thank you. I appreciate that. I do like to talk. So
oh, well, right place.
Very long-winded, but I this was so much fun, you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, dude, it was such a good time. Thanks for coming on.
Oof, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoy that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at ButterYourMacros.
On the web at ButterYourMacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.